Well, it's the first Sunday of a new year, and New Year's a time when many of us like to get a wee bit more practical. We've indulged over Christmas, we've spent all our savings on gifts, we've had a bit of time off, and now it's time to get to work, to be a bit more serious, to make some changes. For the Christian, there's no better book in the Bible to help us wrestle with the practical, everyday realities of our faith than the book of James. It's about faith that works. It's about faith in action. It's about how we actually do the things that we're called to do. If some books of the Bible maybe feel very complicated and theoretical to you, then James is not like that. James is concerned with the nitty-gritty, the everyday, with what it actually means to get on with it and follow Jesus. So it's perfect for those of us who have made New Year's resolutions or commitments at this time of the year to try and walk a bit more closely with him. One of the useful things that James does in his letter is that he takes common myths, commonly held beliefs, and he challenges them. He turns them on their heads, showing that, well, they're not actually true after all. And we'll see a number of these as we go through the book this term. And in these first 18 verses that we're looking at today, James tackles this myth, the myth that says suffering is bad. Now, of course, on one level, that's obviously true. The definition of the word is, well, bad things happening to you. It makes sense that we think of suffering as a bad thing because that's what it is. But just because something is bad or difficult or hard doesn't mean that it has no value. We kind of think life is all about just avoiding suffering at all costs. We live our life as if the aim each day is just to avoid hard things, to avoid hard conversations, hard tasks, to avoid difficulties at all costs. But James starts his letter by talking about trials and temptations and suffering, about hardships. And he's not writing a letter in a bubble. He's not writing about these theoretical ideas that have no bearing on people's lives. But he's writing about a faith that works. And the first thing that he wants to highlight is that as a Christian, do you know, suffering is real. Trials are a part of life. But we shouldn't always see this as a bad thing. James is trying to make clear that as Christians, we are going to suffer. We are going to face trials. We are going to face difficult times. But it's not purposeless. It's for a reason. And there's a proper and a godly way to respond to the trials and the difficulties that we face. And so this morning, we're going to look at the two strategies that James gives us for dealing with our trials, for dealing with our suffering. James points us to two strategies for suffering that help us to see how God is at work, even when life is hard. So if you have James chapter 1 open in the Bible in front of you, you'll find it helpful to look down as we go along and look at these first 18 verses together. The first strategy, what we see in the first four verses, is he tells us to change your perspective. The first thing James tells us to do when we face trials, when we face difficulties, is to change our perspective, to change the way in which we look at things. Now, it's not just a new year, but it's a new decade, and we've got lots of best of the decade lists coming out about TV shows and books and films and all sorts of things. And one of my favourite films of the past decade is the Pixar film Inside Out. I don't know if you saw it. If you didn't, I highly recommend it. But it's a very strange film. It's very abstract for kids, but they seem to enjoy it anyway, because it's all about the emotions that live inside a little girl's head. This is a picture of joy on the your left, sadness on the right. And at the start of the film, Joy, the yellow one, well, she's the main emotion. She's the star of the show. She's the one who matters. She's the leader of all the other emotions. And sadness, well, they try to keep sadness away from things. They try to avoid sadness at all costs. You can see in that picture, they draw a circle on the ground and told sadness, you just stay in there out of everybody's way because we don't need sadness at all. Now, eventually things go wrong and they get lost and a whole adventure ensues that we don't need to get into. But as that happens, they begin to realize the really important role that sadness plays in someone's life. They realize that the moments of joy that the little girl experienced, well, they're so much sweeter because they were following moments of sadness first. They thought that sadness was just a nuisance getting in the way, but when they change their perspective, when they see what's really going on, they realize that sadness plays a really important part in a healthy mind. It's not something that we should avoid, but it wasn't until they changed their perspective that they were able to see this. And this is kind of how James sees trials. They aren't something to be avoided at any cost, but they serve a really important purpose. And this is why the first strategy that James gives us is to change our perspective. Look down at verse 2, if you can, and see what he says there. He says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds." I don't know what you thought about whenever we did the reading and I read that verse, or I read it there now. You're thinking, consider it pure joy when you face trials. Catch yourself on. Trials aren't a joy. This is an easy thing to read in our Bibles, but to live, to see trials as joy. Notice a really key word in what James says. He doesn't say, if you face trials. He says, whenever you face trials. And that's, again, part of the practical everydayness of this letter. It knows what life is like. It's not saying there's a small chance that life might be hard. He's saying, do you know what? Life is going to be hard. Trials are going to come. And James here is suggesting that suffering is not bad to be avoided at any cost, but is something to take joy in, to see purpose in. He says trials of many kinds. He's not just talking about one specific thing. We see later on in the book that some of the trials that this group of Christians were facing included poverty and religious persecution. But he keeps it vague so that it can really apply to anything we're facing. Illness, loneliness, disappointment, bereavement, unemployment, any of the trials that we face on a day-by-day basis. So why joy? We'll look down at verse 3 as he begins to give the answer. Why? Well, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. He's saying we should see our trials, we should see the bad times as joy, because that's what God uses to make us stronger as Christians, to make us more like his Son. And this is something we see right throughout the Bible. In Romans chapter 5, Paul writes, "Not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope." In 1 Peter 1, we read, "In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." So we have Peter, we have Paul, we have James, all very different, but all saying the same thing. Suffering, trials are to be counted as joy because it strengthens us to be stronger in our faith. The word that's translated here as testing could also be translated as refining. It's our faith being thrown into the fire to be refined, for the purities to be removed. It's not a testing of if there is faith, but a refining, a strengthening of the faith that is already there. Look down at verse 4. "Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." James is saying trials lead to perseverance, which then leads to spiritual maturity. It leads to us becoming the people that God wants us to be, to becoming more like Jesus. Sufferings shapes our character as we learn to trust in God more in the midst of the difficulties that we face. Suffering proves, it strengthens, it deepens our faith because trials are an opportunity for us to cling to the promises of our God and to say, no matter what's going on around me, I'm going to hold fast to you as you hold fast to me. So when we suffer, if we believe the myth that suffering is only ever a bad thing and only a bad thing, well, it's very easy to be overwhelmed by the trials that we face. But instead, if we change our perspective, if we see not just the suffering, but we see what God can be doing through that, if we can see how God is at work even in the midst of it, of how he is using it to grow us to spiritual maturity, to being refined, to being more like him, well then, like James, we can consider it pure joy. So the first strategy we see is to change your perspective. The second strategy that James gives us for dealing with trials is to trust in who God is. Now, I don't know what your relationship is like with IKEA furniture. Some people love it. Other people absolutely hate it. And why do some people hate it? What do you think? Well, I think it's because they go to the showroom. They think, that looks great. I would love that in my living room. They realize, hey, that's affordable. And they have it in stock. All they need to go is pick it up, take it home, throw it together, and that'll be fantastic. So they go and they get it and they take it through the checkout. They somehow fit it into the car, even though it takes 4 or 5 different angles. They get home, they open up the box, and they're a bit overwhelmed by all there is to do. There's so many different screws and pieces, more than they could count. It feels a little overwhelming. And so they start to put it together, and well, things don't quite go to plan straight away. The top of the unit ends up on the bottom, and they don't know how that happened. They try to force a piece in where it's probably not meant to go, and it snaps, and so they have to go back to the shop to go to the spare parts bit on the way in to get another one. It takes ages. It isn't quite right. It certainly doesn't look like it did in the showroom. And they kind of wish they'd never bothered and just paid the extra for something that was already built. But I think the reason that this is so many people's experience of IKEA furniture is because they open the box, they take a quick glance at the instructions, and then they throw them away. They're thinking, this is straightforward. Surely I know what to do. But the reality is, if you follow the instructions, it's pretty hard to go wrong. I read every day, that's what my job is. I'm not very handy at all, but I can do IKEA furniture. If you pretty much idiot-proof, the problems only come when you try to do it without looking at what the instructions tell you to do. James is saying that if you want to deal with trials well, if you're suffering and you want to be faithful to God in that, well, don't try and do it on your own. It'll be a disaster. Instead, look at who God is and trust who God is. Look at the advice he gives in verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. This is not just good advice. This is a promise from God. And he's saying we're not expected to be experts in how to deal with every situation that life throws at us. Of course we can't be. But what we can do is turn to the God who knows all things for help. And what does he promise? He promises to give us wisdom when we ask. To grow from our trials will require wisdom. Wisdom that only comes from God. Why would we try and do it on our own? And again, this is something we see throughout the Bible. In Psalm 25, David is suffering many trials. He's on the run from his enemies. He's not being the anointed king that he thought he was going to be. Everybody's waiting for him. He's hiding in a cave. He doesn't know where to turn. And listen to how he prays in Psalm 25. He says, make known to me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. For you I wait all the day long. He doesn't try to fix it on his own. He looks to God and he trusts who God is. So when we face suffering, the worst thing we can do is think, well, I just need to buck my ideas up and try a bit harder. We don't need to prove ourselves in the midst of trials. We need to trust in God. And how does God respond? Look again at verse 5. He gives generously. He gives to all. He gives without finding fault. The one who wants to generously give us his wisdom. This is who God is. So instead of putting our heads down and getting on with things on our own strength, James is saying, look up. See who God is. And trust who God is. That's how you're going to grow through trials. And he emphasizes that our attitude is important here. Look at verses 6, 7, and 8. When he asks, you must believe and not doubt, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think he'll receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. Jesus is saying, this isn't about hedging your bets. It isn't about thinking, well, I'll try my technique and I'll also ask God and hopefully the two things will come together. He's saying, don't be double-minded. Instead, just completely trust in who God is. And so that's the first 8 verses. James gives us these two strategies. Change your perspective and trust who God is. And then James repeats the strategies again. He reinforces the points he's been making. Look at verses 9 to 12 and we see the same strategy for facing suffering. James tells us again to change our perspective. Look at verse 9 to begin with. The brother in humble circumstances ought to take pride in his high position. He uses the word brothers here. I could easily say brothers and sisters. But by calling them brothers, James is making clear that he's speaking about a fellow Christian. This isn't just anybody, this is a believer. And he's saying, what you need to do is look below your worldly situation and instead boast about the high position, take pride in the high position that you have spiritually. They need to change their perspective because though in the eyes of the world they may be worthless because they're poor, they don't have very much, they're not of much status, in Christ, they are rich because they have fullness of life in him. He's saying, change your perspective. Look beyond what the world sees and instead see what God sees. And he sees you in a high position because he sees you as loved, as his child, as belonging to him. To those who have money, he tells them in verses 10 and 11 to change their perspective by not placing their hope in that money. He's reminding them in verse 11 that the material things will fade away. They will not last. Instead, look down at verse 12. He sums it all up. He says, blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. A changed perspective here shows that life isn't about what we have or don't have. Blessing means receiving God's favor. And what makes a man blessed isn't his earthly status, but it's if he perseveres with God even through the trials. Doesn't this change our perspective completely? Earthly, worldly well-being, wealth, and material things, they're not the aim for the life of a believer. But persevering, no matter what comes our way, that's what God calls us to trust in him and to keep going with him. I don't know what Christmas films you watched over the holidays, if any. Maybe you watched the new BBC version of A Christmas Carol. I didn't, but maybe you did. I was listening to a podcast the other day. They were talking about the best Christmas films, and they said that all good Christmas films are essentially a reworking of A Christmas Carol. They're about a dramatic event that takes place in someone's life that changes the protagonist's perspective so that they can see clearly what they've been missing all along. So in A Christmas Carol, Scrooge is shown by the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future what life is like without him and what opportunities he's missed, and it changes his perspective and he realizes how miserable he's been and he changes. In It's a Wonderful Life, George Bailey sees what life would have been like if he had never been born. And he realizes that even though times are hard, actually, life is good and worth living after all. In Home Alone, Kevin McAllister wishes that he had no family anymore because there's such a pain in the neck. And then all of a sudden they're gone and he misses them and he changes and cares about them more. And we like to think about that at this time of the year, don't we? But changing your perspective, changing the way you look at things can change an awful lot. And James is saying, whenever trials come, the first strategy is to change your perspective, to see things as God sees things, and it will totally change how you view what is going on. And then James goes back again to his second strategy, trust who God is, in verses 13 through to 18. Here, James makes it really clear, and we don't have time to go into this in loads of detail, but he makes clear that God is not the author of temptation or of anything evil. Rather, he is the one who gives good gifts to his people, especially the gift of life. Look down at verses 13 and 14 and 15 when he's speaking about temptation. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own evil desire he is dragged away and enticed. And then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. And James is saying, I know that trials are hard. And every trial, when it comes, it brings temptations. It brings us these desires that take us away from God. And while God at times may test his people, he never tempts them to sin. Rather, temptation, quite clearly in verse 14, comes out of our own evil desires. We cannot blame God for our temptations. And then he shows the consequences of giving in. If someone welcomes temptation instead of resisting it, James is saying that desire conceives and then gives birth to sin, and the result of that is death. We all experience temptations, but holding on to those sinful desires is not okay. James is warning us here not to be tricked, that in the midst of suffering, we'll be tempted in so many ways. But don't be tricked into a false view of God. Don't think, I'm only being tempted because God's tempting me. He makes it clear that God does not do that. Instead, trust who God is. Look at verses 16, 17, 18. He uses strong language. He says, don't be deceived. My dear brothers, every good and perfect gift is from above. He does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth. God does not tempt. God does not change. God is the one who gives us all the good things that we have in life. And in our sufferings, James is saying, it's easy to get angry at God. It's easy to blame him. It's easy to forget who he is. And that's why he gives us this second strategy, to trust in who God is, so that we can flee away from temptation and instead run to our God. I wonder how many of you have made a New Year's resolution to spend more time with God this year, rather in prayer or reading the Bible or something like that. Or maybe you haven't actually made a resolution, but it's a new year and you're thinking, right, this year I'm going to walk a lot more closely with Jesus. Or maybe you're not even in the place where you can make a resolution. Maybe you're just in the midst of suffering and struggling and you can't even lift your head. James is a book that helps all of us to have a faith that works, to help us put our faith into action. And James starts his letter talking about trials and sufferings and the temptations that that brings, because he knows that this is just such a reality for all of us. This is what our life is going to look like. We all suffer. We all face trials at different times and in different ways. And we all face temptations in the midst of that. Remember, he didn't write if you face trials, but whenever you face trials. So know first of all that if you're struggling, this is what to expect. We live in a broken and a fallen and a sinful world that causes us to suffer. But don't fall for the myth that suffering is only bad, because we do not suffer without hope. James gives us these two hugely practical strategies for how to cope when faced with trials. The first is to change our perspective. Yes, we suffer, but when we see things how God sees them and not from our own vantage point, it gives us hope to keep going. Our suffering has a purpose. Our suffering helps us to grow. Our suffering is temporary. Through his death, Jesus has given us eternal life and hope forever. He's refining us, he's making us more like him. And so though we suffer now as Christians, we know that this is not all there is. And the best is still to come. That's the changed perspective we need to have. Then secondly, we have to trust in who God is. When we suffer, it's easy to turn to sinful temptations to give us instant satisfaction. But it's much better to turn to the one who offers us eternal joy in him. As we go into a new year, we have no idea what this year is going to bring. But we know that whenever we face trials, and we will, we do not face them on our own. They are not purposeless. So let's go together into a new year, armed to face anything, trusting in who God is and seeing things from his perspective. Shall we pray?